brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. What's up, guys, and welcome. You found your way to part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity, brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. We're about to be joined on the phone line by the man beast, Rhino, the final ECW heavyweight champion before the company went under, and most recently, NWA world champion. So we're going to get him on the line. We have a lot to ask him, so let's cue it up right now, and let's talk to Rhino. Rhino, welcome to JG's Radio Free Insanity, man.
Well, thank you for having me.
No, it's great to have you on. Great to have you on. You were actually one of the most amazing stories from last year because you kind of came from WWE where, you know, your career kind of stalled a bit, and you came right into TNA, like a house of fire, winning the world title. What's that like? What's it like being in TNA right now with kind of a second chance?
Well, I like TNA because, you know, they put together a wrestling show, and, you know, with Vince, it's like if the writers don't have anything for you, it doesn't matter how good you are. Really, you know, you can sit the bench, and unfortunately, that's the case with a lot of the talent they have now. And, you know, it's just guys like Val Venus and, you know, Steven Richards, they're very talented. They can talk and they can wrestle, and, you know, they've got it, but it's not being used, so kind of where I was at. And actually, it was a breath of fresh air going into TNA. So.
Well, it's kind of funny. You had just come from, I mean, you were the outgoing ECW world champion and television champion when they ended. And you kind of came in that that invasion angle where so many people showed up all at once. Do you kind of think you were lost in the shuffle right off the bat?
Back in 2001?
Yeah.
No, not really. You know, it's, I mean, the whole angle was pretty fun. There was a lot of guys, but I think they could have did that a little different. But, you know, shortly after that, I had my neck surgery. So, yeah. I think like 4 months after the invasion angle, 4 or 5 months. So.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, I'm on Long Island, and I remember you guys had come out to Nassau Coliseum, and you had that match against Tajiri, where McMahon kind of came out and called off the match for a bikini contest.
Yeah.
I want to get your side of the story on that, about what happened beforehand, what happened afterwards, just the whole situation, how you felt about it.
Well, the thing is, you know, right before the match, he was telling us you can't make a mistake, just go out there and call it. Tajiri's a spot guy, and he likes to call stuff. So it's just like, Tajiri's like, oh, let's call. I go, no, let's just go out there and work and have fun and not call anything, go in the ring. So anyways, basically it was like me chopping meat. You know, I can't make a guy fight back. I mean, you know, we had a lot of good matches, but, you know, we called a lot of stuff. So, but a lot of the fans, they were upset, and, you know, it's like, why would Vince do that? A lot of the boys were upset, and the agents, too, you know. So, I mean, afterwards, I talked to him, just like, you'd say this stuff. He's like, well, the fans were chanting boring. You know, well, they were chanting. They weren't sitting on their hands talking to their neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, if they're chanting boring, at least they're watching the match.
That's one of the things that I know a lot of the wrestling schools tell the kids, that even if they're chanting something, at least it's something.
Exactly. So, and then I was told, you know, in ECW, you know, never let the fans dictate your match. I mean, if they're chanting boring, you know, slowly, you know, work into something else, you know. But when I went to WWE, I was told by agents, oh, if they're chanting boring, just sit out and hold. So, it was one of those things. It's just like, you know, when he sits there and tells me, you know, give the fans what they want. If they're bored, entertain them. Okay, so if the fans are saying, show your tits to one of your girl wrestlers, they should show their tits. That's what you want to say, but you're thinking, okay, well, just, you know, keep your job.
Yeah, a lot of biting of the lip when you're there?
Sometimes, you know, but for the most part, I mean, I was, you know, everybody liked working with me. I liked working with a lot of people, and it was a lot of fun. And, I mean, they didn't totally bury me, but it just, you know, they didn't have anything for me. And, you know, week after week, when you're going to them with ideas, and they're like, oh, you know, you just don't have anything for it. It's kind of like one of those things where you're like, what am I doing here, you know?
Yeah.
I'm collecting a paycheck, you know, so.
Well, you just come from, I mean, that's the thing that gets me about a lot of the guys I talk to who went from ECW to WWE. It's that huge difference in kind of, let's say enthusiasm, but I mean, you go from one place where your opinions are kind of valued a little bit more than usual to a place where they're valued a little bit less than usual, I guess.
Well, I mean, you know, they write a show there, and it's, you know, when I went there and now, it's a lot different. You know, it's gotten more, it's more, how can you put it? A lot of the guys are miserable because they don't have a spot, you know. Like when I first went there, you know, it's just like I could show up to work and not have to worry about anything. I'd be used and, you know, and just, it was a lot of fun, you know, and the money was good and all that stuff. And then it's just, you know, I think the power, you know, is more in the writer's hands as opposed to, you know, the guys.
I mean, at what point did you hit a point where you said to yourself, this isn't as good as I thought it was going to be? I mean, everyone has that one moment where you're either at a job or whatnot where you start to realize that maybe it's not as great as you thought it was originally. When was that moment for you?
I want to say end of 2003, 2004, so. Actually, right around the fall of 2003, I remember I just wanted to quit. Just like, what am I doing here, you know? I mean, then I went to Raw, and it picked up a little bit with me and Tajiri teaming, and it was a little fun, but, you know, and then after that, I'd say the last 8 months, you know, that I was with WWE, it just kind of like, you know, I'd go out there and I'd get to a point where I want to quit, and then I'd have a good weekend, you know. So, and what's sad is though, but me with guys like Muhammad, Hassan, and you know, we'd have a good match. They put them over because they want to build them. Next thing you know, the guy's out of a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Val Venus. You know, perfect example here. You could be building. This guy's been with you for so long. You know, he can talk when he was Chief Sean Morley.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just like he shows you he can talk, he can do different characters, invest time and money into him. He's not going to go out there and get a sexual harassment suit. He's a good guy all around. Invest time and money into him, and it's going to pay off. Here, they just, you know, I mean, they seem like they're going to invest time and money into guys that really won't pay off, you know, because they're, you know, they're really, you know, jerks outside the ring.
Well,
they get in trouble.
I hear you. What it feels like, I mean, what you're saying, and what makes sense, it's kind of weird. I mean, it almost seems like they're putting these young guys, as mentioned before, these guys who aren't going to be around for a while, over these experienced guys, but then there's no care afterwards to try to rebuild a guy like Val Venus. He just jobs, and then that's the end of it. There's no effort to kind of fix that character. I mean, for somebody who's been in the company so long, I mean, what kind of message does that send to people about kind of being loyal and where you're going to end up after years upon years?
Yeah, well, the thing is just like I can understand they try to look for the next Steve Austin or the next Rock, you know, but remember, Steve Austin wrestled for WCW for how long? How many years did he wrestle for him before he went to WWE and then, you know, really got over?
Yeah, like 5 years then.
And then, you know, there's a couple other guys, you know, I mean, that they repackaged and, you know, drew some money, so.
Well, what I actually found really weird about your time on Raw, I mean, I remember you had the team with Tajiri and you guys did the feud with La Resistance, but you guys were actually involved in a really high-profile spot on Raw. It was the one with the Diva Search, where The Rock came out and chased Coachman away.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
And then you guys came back, and I remember thinking to myself watching that, they brought in Rock. They used him for this one spot, which is obviously, that's probably one of his last times there. It's supposed to be a big, high-profile thing. And you guys were involved as baby faces side by side with him. I thought, honest to God, at that point, I thought that it was going to be kind of a resurgence for you and Tajiri, and that just didn't happen.
Yeah, but it wasn't. So, I mean, you know, it was fun, though. Like I said, they never really buried me. And if it wasn't for that incident, I'd probably still be there. But I'm glad things happened for a reason, you know, and I'm glad I'm where I'm at now. Because it's kind of like TNA, kind of like ECW. You can go there and work and not really have to worry about, well, am I going to be used this week? Or if, you know, if your hard work, you know,
Well, it's got to be cool for you and Christian Cage, too. I mean, you guys started off back, I think it was called Thug Inc., Thug Life. You,
yes, Thug
Edge,
Life.
Yep, you, Edge, Christian, and Joey Legend. And now, you know, within a few months of each other, you and Christian went from kind of being underused in WWE to being, you know, major players in TNA. Yeah. What's that like for the two of you?
It's fun. You know, he definitely, I'm glad he came over, you know. You know, it's fun working with him again. I think Christian Cage, just, you know, the whole, I like him better as a heel.
Yeah.
Because he's funny. And, you know, I think he was so underused. You know, the guy had everything, you know. So I remember actually wrestling him over in South Korea. And, we had a hell of a match. And the crowd over there, they were so easy. But just working with him, he made me laugh a couple times, you know, just his facials and stuff. And obviously he was a heel at the time. And this was for WWE. And I remember I clotheslined him over the top rope, you know, and I fire up into the beginning of the match. And the way they had the lighting set up, they were like trusses, you know. And I look over and they had speakers and stuff. He jumped on the speaker and he climbed halfway up. I mean, in a matter of like 5 seconds, you know, because I go run him over the top and then, you know, oh no, that's what it was. I go for the gore. He jumps out of the ring.
Okay.
And I circle around and the people are booing, right? And then I turn around and he climbed halfway up the lighting. I'm looking at him like,
oh, man.
What are you doing? He's laughing. And he's like kicking that air as if I was trying to get him, but I'm still in the ring. So he's really, really good. So
yeah, I mean,
really enjoyed working with him.
Well, what are your feelings about Edge right now? Just winning the world title. I mean, he's lost to the John Cena, but winning the world title over in WWE. You started off with him, too.
Yeah, you know what? I thought they would keep it on him longer, you know. I heard ratings were up, and, you know, the thing with him and Lita did a 5.6 or something, and, you know, just I like the whole rated R superstar, and I don't know why they would take it off him, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But, I mean, it's one of those things where you just ask why, you know. I really didn't get a chance to watch the Royal Rumble, but I heard a lot of people weren't happy with it.
No, it was really bad. It was, yeah, the pacing was weird. They actually put the Rumble match in the middle of the card and closed out with Angle against Mark Henry, which was peculiar on so many levels.
Well, I think the thing with that is they're looking to the next pay-per-view with Taker and Angle, and especially when you break the ring at the end when Lightning hits it, you know, you really can't do. Unfortunately, they booked a match, you know, that shouldn't have been a main event match.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it was a very bizarre show. I mean, from top to bottom with the whole, even with this now, the new thing is kind of exploiting Eddie Guerrero. We had Tom Pritchard on in the first part and talked a little bit about that too, about how WWE and in general wrestling, I mean, at different times has used people's deaths to kind of promote matches and promote storylines. And that seems to be kind of like a new running theme. I know, I mean, you worked with Eddie, right?
Oh, several times.
Yeah. What are your, any memories of him? What are your thoughts on the whole situation?
Yeah, just a great guy. And working with him, him and Chavo, I remember, you know, because me and Chris would work with him, and, you know, and I think me and Cena actually teamed up one time and wrestled him and Chavo. And, you know, it's just the one thing I really liked about Eddie, he just liked to go out there and feel the crowd and not really, you know, talk over too much. And that's when I first started to learn, you know, how to go out there and, you know, react from, you know, the people, listen to the people and feel the people. And that's what makes a really good worker. You know, guys like Flair do that, you know, and, you know, a lot of guys, you know, like Jarrett, same thing, you know, he just goes out there and feels it, you know. It's like Austin, I tagged with him, and against Benoit, this is 2001, and against Benoit and Chris Jericho. And it's funny because, you know, Steve says, you know, this and this, and, you know, and talks over a little bit, and then Chris comes over to me, he goes, you know, when we go out there, he's not going to do any of that. I look at him, I'm like, okay, because a few months after I got into WWF, well, WWF at the time, WWE, and I'm like, nervous. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, he likes to call stuff out there. I'm like, cool. So we went out there, and there was a cage match, a tag cage match, and it was a lot of fun. And I mean, the match was awesome, and the people loved it. But it just goes to show you how talented he is. So that's one thing, you know, working with Eddie, I learned just to go out there and feel the crowd. And just, I remember one time we were in England, and we wrestled like a 25-minute match. So this was like 2004, right before intermission. It was a lot of fun. The people were really into it, and what a hard work.
Do you find that, do you find the kids today, a lot of the new wrestlers that are coming up, aren't really taught that? They're kind of taught more of compiling spots and kind of putting spots together as opposed to listening to the audience?
Yeah, you know what? I was like that. You might think this match will be great, but when you go out there, and just people might not be into it, you know? So I'll never forget one time me and Edge, we were on an Indian reservation working, and Christian was there, Christian Cage, and it was funny because we were thinking about doing a serious match, and then we go out there, and it's just like we started doing comedy stuff, and the people loved it, you know, and we changed it up a little bit out there, but, I mean, we had a lot of fun, and we hardly did anything, and he had a lot of kids, so no reason to, you know, do a, you know, a serious wrestling match. You know, we throw in some serious spots here and there, but anyways. Yeah, a lot of guys nowadays, they just, you know, they don't settle down, don't let things register. But when you get older, you're like, okay, I'm starting to get the hang of this business.
Right. Well, it's also got to be like, I think nowadays too, especially with a lot of limited TV time, it almost seems like a lot of them are trying to get every spot they possibly can in before their 4 minutes runs up.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's good, because, like, sometimes fans want to see fast-paced action, you know, but then again, look at all the guys, you know, that have drawn a lot of money, you know, they're quick when they need to be quick, but they let stuff register, you know, like Kip James, it's just like every time he throws a punch, you know, he lets it register. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I have a habit of throwing, like, 5 punches in a matter of, you know, 5 seconds, you know, or 10 punches in 5-6 seconds, you know. But anyway. But, yeah, it just, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, with years in the business, you learn and slow it down a little bit and let the fans, you know, digest what you just did.
Well, in the years you've been here, I mean, one of the things that strikes me about you is that, I mean, a lot of people we have on the show that used to be part of WWE always kind of focus more on some of the negative aspects of working there. But, I mean, you definitely have some good memories. Out of all the people that you wrestled there, not only there, but your whole career, who are some of the top ones that you liked working with?
Oh, you know what? Believe it or not, Sandman.
Oh, yeah?
One time he showed up to the arena, he goes, oh, I just got up. It was Gary, Indiana. He goes, I hadn't had anything to drink. I'm sober. I'm like, get this man some beer. I go, I wrestle you. When you're drunk, you're fine. Sober could be a problem. But yeah, I really enjoyed wrestling Sandman. Believe it or not, as well. I loved wrestling Christian Cage. Hopefully we get to wrestle. Who else? You know what? Now, I'm working with Abyss, and this is the big guy. You know, he can do a lot for a big guy, and he's very talented, so I'm having a lot of fun working with him. And I work with him a lot on indies, and a decent amount, and I've got some shows coming up where I'm going to be wrestling him. Sabu, another guy. So, but anyway.
Well, right now in TNA, I mean, you guys got so much young talent kind of coming up. We just had Samoa Joe on the show last week. Yeah, out of all the young guys that you're seeing now kind of breaking into to TNA, I mean, who would you kind of say to keep an eye on, and who would you who do you think has the most potential?
Samoa Joe. I really like his work. Who else? Obviously Christian Cage. I've got a brain fart.
Don't worry about it.
You know, there's so many guys, you know, who are very talented. What I like about TNA, it's just, you know, you go out there and you get wrestling matches, you know. So, and you get little storylines here and there, but for the most part, the wrestling tells a story, you know. So, oh, God, there's so many. So.
Well, I mean, the company is definitely, I've noticed personally from watching the shows, it seems to be improving ever since you guys, they switched over to the monthly pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Since then, it seems the a lot more exciting, a lot more going on, and but not too much going on to the point where it doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's just, you know, like this past, what was it, I think this past Saturday, that was the highest rated show that they had.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the ratings are going up. Spike's really happy, and they're working with the company. So I know Dixie, she's going out to have a meeting with them. So hopefully talk about another special, maybe, you know, run it at 2 hours on Monday night. That would be nice.
That would be cool. Yes.
Doing a live show.
How would that be to go against them?
But I think we should do an hour before. You know, Raw comes on at 9, so go from 8 to 10. So, and pull out no stops, you know, just for the wrestling fans. I think it'll be really exciting and, you know, get a lot of attention. I think what TNA needs to do now, they, you know, everything's falling into place. They just need to do some outside marketing, like crossover and stuff like that. Get their guys out on tonight shows and their late night shows and stuff like that. So,
well, let me ask you, I mean, you brought up Jeff Jarrett before, and, I know Jeff Jarrett takes a lot of criticism, especially from the internet and from
yeah.
fans and things like that. What is your opinion of Jeff and working with him and him as just a worker in TNA?
You know what? I've had a lot of fun wrestling him, and I'm actually wrestling him on March 17th in Detroit. It's actually TNA's first house show.
Oh.
So, I'm actually pretty excited. So, just working with Jeff, it's definitely a lot of fun. He goes out there and he's a hard worker, and he doesn't shy away from anything, you know. So I respect that, and he's willing to do anything. And thing is with Jeff, I met him. I mean, actually, right after I was fired. And I was going down to Puerto Rico, and this is like a week or two after they told me I was canned. And anyways, I met him. We never talked about business. This is during my 3 months. And then we just hung out and had a lot of fun. You know, he's a down-to-earth guy, you know, and he hangs out with the boys. He's one of the boys, you know. So he's not, you know, okay, I'm off this and I can't hang out with you.
Yeah.
So, and he hangs out with a lot of fans too. So, but personally, I have nothing but good things to say about him. So, I wish I had something bad to say.
You think he gets a bad rap?
Yeah, he definitely gets a bad rap, you know. So, but anyways, some people are tired of him. I'm not, you know, so not yet.
One of the big memories, I guess, of you and TNA was you beating Jarrett down for Glory, taking the NWA title from him. I mean, it definitely was a great moment, the way they kind of built it up, the way people responded. Just the whole video clip, I think, altogether is one of those highlights that TNA can kind of show because of the emotion in the arena. What was that like for you? I mean, you're kind of coming full circle now. You just came from WWE where, you know, your name before wasn't exactly the best for your character creatively, and here you are in TNA, and you're holding the world title above your head. What was that like?
It was awesome. I mean, you know, just... You know, to go into that pay-per-view and come out a champion, you know, it's just like that title is, you know, it's been around for so many years, and you know, just to hold it, even though in TV land, I think it was like a week and a half, but you know, it was like a couple days because we taped the show, and I mean, it was nice to be the champion. Hopefully, I have a run at it for it again soon. You know, and actually, one thing Jeff did give me was 15 stitches from that guitar shot.
Oh, man.
My hair was covered in blood. You know, obviously my face and everything, too. But, yeah, right after the match, I went back and got stitched up. So, but, yeah, it was definitely really, really, it was definitely a highlight, you know.
I mean, you're a fan of the industry. I mean, you grew up, I mean, did you grow up watching it and stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, I watched WWE, and the problem was is we never got the NWA, you know, and WCW, when did Turner buy?
88, 89.
Okay, yeah. We really didn't see that because we didn't have cable. Mm-hmm. Remember, you know, and I'd look in the magazines, and cause, I mean, anything about wrestling, you know, it's just like I love. I used to watch GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Hollywood and Vine and Big Dad
yeah.
Mama.
Yeah, and then what was the Farmer's Daughter, or was that her name?
No, that was her name. Farmer's Daughter. Ivory was there, too, with
yeah.
Tina Ferrari.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching that, and I'm like, wow, this is cool. Yeah. I mean, as a kid, I'd see right through it. I'm like, but it's cool. It's wrestling, you know?
It was on. It was on channel, well, for us, it was PIX, so channel 11. We used to watch it, like, on Saturday mornings. I'm from Long Island, so we didn't get much outside. I mean, I'm in New York, so yeah. I got New York. That was about all we really got on TV out here.
Yeah.
No, but I totally hear. But my question to you is, as somebody who grew up watching wrestling, I know I talk to a lot of guys who've been in the industry for a while, and they all kind of say the same thing about title belts, that you kind of reach a point where it's not, you don't get giddy over winning the titles anymore. They look at it kind of, oh, well, now I have more luggage to carry, blah, blah, blah. But the NWA title, with such a history behind it, so many different people who have held it, to be a fan of wrestling and to win that title, I mean, that's got to be a totally different experience than winning any other title.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. You know, like the greats that have held it, you know, from your Harley Race to, you know, Dory Funk and Ric Flair. I mean, it's just, you know, one of those things, you know, your name is added. And, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the guys are still fans inside. You know, even though you're in the business, you know, sometimes it feels like a job, or sometimes it's, you know, it's tainted, you know, by politics or whatever, you know, your love for it. But, I mean, when it comes down, you know, it comes down to it. It's just like, you know, to win something or for to be put over for something like that, it's kind of like a reward to you, you know. It's kind of like a little trophy saying, hey, you know, and plus they believe in you, you know. It's like they see something in you. Like, this guy could be a draw, you know, so.
Well, growing up, I mean, you said before that you watched it, you know, whenever you could. What were some of your influences? Who were some of the wrestlers you tried to learn from, emulate, or take after?
You know what? I try and watch guys that go out there and wrestle, like Dean Malenko. And I remember I was wrestling, you know, at the time, but like in 95, 96, 97, you know, and when he was in WCW, Chris Benoit, you know, Eddie Guerrero, all these guys I'd watch, study, you know, and try and learn, you know, wrestling moves and all that stuff, and, you know, learn how to put together certain spots, and I'd study it, you know, and that's what you have to do, you know. And, you know, then I'd watch guys like Hulk Hogan, you know, with all the hype and, you know, how he'd do his promos and, you know, and all that stuff, and try to learn from him, you know. So,
a little bit from different people?
Yeah, I try to pull a little bit from everything. You know, I'd like to think my style is a little Japanese, because I really love Japanese wrestling. You know, I've been over there for events, but I haven't been over there for New Japan or All Japan or any other company. And I'd like to do that, you know. So there's talks. We're working with New Japan. Oh, excuse me. There's talks, I guess, we're going to do something with New Japan Pro Wrestling, TNA. So I know they wanted to bring me over, so I'm pretty excited to go over.
Nice.
Hopefully it's pretty soon.
It sounds like, I mean, most of the guys that we've had on, we had Matt Morgan on a while ago, and Charlie Haas, and both of them had just come back from Japan. And most of these guys, I mean, if you really love the wrestling aspect of the industry, it seems like just kind of a natural place to be.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, another thing, you know, I was watching Raw, and you have to watch your competition. And sometimes I'm busy, you know, and I can't catch the show. You know, and it's just like with Rob, it seems like they didn't do any big build up for him coming back from, you know, what I asked.
Oh, yeah.
What I seen, and it's just like the guy is so over, you know, and I don't know why he hasn't been the champion.
Oh yeah, you're talking about Rob Van Dam coming back, who was at the Rumble, and then the next night they put him against Snitsky in the first match. It was kind of just almost a throwaway. I forgot that he was there.
Yeah, I mean, the people love him. I don't know why they don't, you know, they don't utilize him.
You think it's more or less, he's just, I mean, because, you know, I mean, Rob kind of has that reputation of speaking his mind, I guess you could say. You think he maybe sometimes he just doesn't fit into their mold?
You know, the thing is, you know, if he speaks his mind, you know, he speaks his mind, but if he's a draw, he's a draw, you know.
Yeah.
If he's going to make you money, obviously he's making Vince money now, but he can make him a lot more money, you know, so.
Yeah, it almost seems like that's not the focus anymore, which is kind of sad. It's almost kind of who's friends with who as opposed to who can really make some cash.
Yeah, so.
If you can go back in history, just get to one question I ask this to every guest that we have on. If you can go back through history to any wrestling promotion and face somebody, who would you like to face?
Oh, I'd like to wrestle Hulk Hogan, late 80s.
Mm-hmm. WWF Hogan 80s, Hulk
Hogan? Yeah, yeah. And who else? The Honky Tonk Man, because that was just a mark for him.
Oh, it's you know, I'll tell you something funny. I did, I have a book coming out in May, called World Wrestling Insanity. It's based on the site. And the Honky Tonk Man was actually one of the first wrestlers I had participated in the book. And after he had written back his questions, I wrote back to him, and I told him point blank that growing up, he was my favorite wrestler growing up.
Yeah.
When he pushed down Elizabeth and that whole Saturday Night's Main Event thing, it was crazy. He didn't write back to that, but I felt kind of weird. And up until now, I've yet to really meet anybody that was as big a fan of Honky Tonk as I was.
Really?
I loved him, man.
Well, I remember I was a mark for Elvis, you know, because my mom was a huge mark for Elvis, and I'll never forget, they were asking the wrestlers what they wanted for Christmas, you know, and it was him and Jimmy Hart, you know, they do quick, you know, what did you want for Christmas, and, you know, some wrestlers would say certain things, and Honky Tonk Man popped up, and he goes something about Graceland, he wants to like Graceland for Christmas, or he's going to take Graceland. I go, Mom, what's Graceland? Like, that's where Elvis's home is, or that's Elvis's home. I'm like, that dude's cool.
It's Elvis's house. No, so. I still have the Pile Driver video cassette, not the audio, but actually the video.
Really?
You see videos, and they have him and that whole Honky Tonk Man music video, and he was talking about making it, and he got dust all over his pink Cadillac, and he had, like, the scars blowing. Just a kind of a character that was based so much on just getting under the skin of the fans on such a weird level. But no, totally. I mean, I grew up as a mark for HTM myself, man.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, and I watch tapes, you know, because to this day, it's like, you know, you still have to watch and learn, and, you know, and it's, you know, what old can be new again, you know, and just watch it, and that's when Pat Patterson was, you know, doing the shows, and just the way they let the wrestling, you know, tell the story, and it's just, I still to this day, I'll watch, and it's just like, I'm brought into the match, you know, it's just like, wow, that was awesome, you know, and it's just one of those things where they're getting so far away from it, you know, with WWE's product now, and, you know, fans, I'm sorry, but they still want to see wrestling. You know, they want to see hard-hitting wrestling, you know, so they want the X division, they want bigger guys, you know, that might not do flips and stuff, but can, you know, put on a hell of a match.
Yeah, it almost seems like the focus, like they've taken the focus off of the wrestling in the ring, which is, I mean, on one hand, you can kind of rationalize it and say, well, you know, they want to focus on the entertainment aspect, but it almost seems as though they haven't put any emphasis on the wrestling itself. It's more or less about...
It's secondary.
Yeah, exactly. And when that's the one part of your product that you're always going to have to promote, why not make that the first thing on your... You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for example, I was watching Raw the first hour, and, like, it seems like certain matches they want to, like, try and hype up, you know, on the show. Like, they'll do a... in the locker room. One thing I never understood, it's like, okay, if I'm in the locker room talking to my opponent, they tell you not to look in the camera. Well, if there's a camera guy, a lighting guy, a sound guy,
well, yeah,
that I know he's there,
yeah,
why can't I look at the camera? You know, it's just like, I mean, if any fan, you know, if they're watching a locker room scene, but it's like, hello? Acknowledge the fact that there's a camera there, you know? I mean, they were doing something with Chris Masters and, Carlito?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Chris Masters slapped him, you know, because I guess something about the Rumble and whatever match, Hell in a Cell, I think they had, or
yeah, the they were part of. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just like, you know, I can understand that, but why couldn't that take place in the ring?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, smack them, it's like, I don't trust you, you know? It's like, you can get a camera close enough so you can pick it up. You know, why? Well, I mean, I didn't stick around to watch the match, so obviously they didn't do that, and they didn't sell me on the match to stick around and watch it. I had to go eat, but it's just one of those things, it's like, that minute and a half, you could have, you know, given to someone to wrestle or had a much talk.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about this the other day. It's almost like they do things at a slow pace to the point where eventually it changes and no one notices. Like, it wasn't like that always. I mean, obviously, you know from watching wrestling too, but it was never kind of the ignore the camera thing. And then in the late 90s, they started that GTV thing where they were black and white to kind of give an excuse as to why a camera's picking up these things. And then one day they just dropped it and they just said, you know what, the camera's going to pick up everything. And so many people complain, like, I think there was a situation. Kane was once in a limo that got a Shane O'Mac drove into the truck, something like that. And there was actually a camera in the limo. And said, how the hell did you get a camera in the limo? You know, who knew that they were going to be blowing up a limo? You know,
yeah.
It's little things like that. I always think they kind of suspend the make it hard to suspend disbelief.
Yeah,
it's right in your face.
Yeah, but you know, what can you do? So
he's gonna kind of roll with the punches, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want, you know, it's like when the Monday Night Wars, when they were going on. I mean, you know, your competition made you better, you know, and I mean that's why I hope, you know, that they realize, you know, it's like, come on, let's get back to wrestling and, you know, better their product because it's just gonna better us. But right now, it's making it, you know, easy for us to have a better product because the product and what they're putting out, it's just a lot of fans are kind of like, eh. And I hear it a lot. It's just like, I don't even like watching WWE anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people say that. It's just, there's too much talk, you know?
It's almost, and the storylines themselves, too, because it's one thing to have stories and to have kind of that soap opera feel, but it's another thing to not have it logically flow and to not have continuity with a lot of things. And you said before about Val Venus kind of dropping people left and right and bring this up and bring that down. It almost gets confusing to the point where you can't really follow anybody for too long because you don't know how long they're going to be on top.
Yeah.
Well, you said before, you're a student of the game. You've watched a lot of wrestling. Out of everything you've watched and everything you've learned in the last few years, what do you think is the most important lesson you've picked up in the industry?
Oh, so many of them.
Oh, some of them.
Oh gosh. Don't, you know, my problem is, you know, I live for wrestling, you know, because it's a love and a passion. But don't bring your work home with you. You know, that's like any job. Especially, you know, it's like, I mean, if you're unhappy or whatever, just, you know, leave it at work. You know, I mean, try and do things to better yourself, you know, and there probably could have been things I could have done to better myself, and, you know, but it's just like, just don't become miserable and don't bring it home with you. So.
That's good. Yeah, and I think a lot of the guys today, a lot of the guys coming up have to start picking up some of these lessons before, you know.
Yeah, like my buddy, he's getting into wrestling. He's a pro bodybuilder. Actually, he's staying with me. He just bought a house in Detroit. And actually, he was booked to go do the thing at Survivor Series in Detroit to push out, like, Undertaker and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And anyways, he's training in that Scott DeMora's place. And so he booked him to go down there and do that. And all that for Tommy Dreamer did. And Scott's like, it's good because you can see, you know, the atmosphere. And you know, I tell my buddy Matt, his name's Matt Duvall, and I told him how it was, you know. And he said when he walked in there, because, you know, he's a pro bodybuilder and he knows Batista and all that stuff. And he actually just tore his pec and he had, you know, he was like 3 or 4 months out of surgery. So, and he still looked great. And he said, you know, a lot of people recognized him because he's in the magazines and all that. So he, you know, he talked to a lot of guys and he said he just looked around and he goes, everybody's miserable, you know, and he definitely wants to work with TNA. He goes, I don't know if I could work there. And he goes, you know, the schedules, you know, from what he told me about the schedule and then just, you know, about the atmosphere, he said, you know, just going there, it's 10 times worse than what he could ever imagine it could be, you know. So it's unfortunate people are miserable and they're supposed to be doing this because they love it, you know.
It's just, I think the irony is that in the whole WCW, WWF war, a lot of the guys, like Jericho was one of the guys that was vocal about jumping from one to the other, regardless of money, because of the morale was so down in WCW. And now it's WWE playing the role of WCW and TNA almost playing the role of late 90s WWF.
Yeah.
So you're definitely, I guess you're in a good spot right now.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that you're going to see that a lot. A lot of guys are just going to, you know, hey, you know, screw the schedule, and you know, I'm going to go down there, and as long as I'm happy, you know. And to be honest with you, I'm working a lot on the indies, and, you know, actually, I work with several groups, you know. Like, I go in probably every month for them, you know, like Jersey All Pro, Cyberspace, Frank Goodman's group up there. And it just, the thing that's nice about that, it's like I can go there and see the young talent, you know, and I like watching the match, you know, and or the matches, and, you know, if I can tell them something, and, you know, if I can help them out, you know, and I learn too, you know, so, and it's fun to see, you know. It's like, okay, I remember when I started out 11 years ago, I was, you know, that guy, you know, trying this or trying that, or, you know, sometimes, you know, if you do something, it just totally didn't get over, and you're like, okay, why didn't that get over, you know, and so, but I like helping the guys out, you know, and it's nice when they're sitting there and they're listening, and, you know, they're really, you know, into it, you know, so,
you know, that's cool. I mean,
into what you're saying, you know, and that's what I enjoy about doing the independents. And a lot of the groups I work for, it's fun, because you can go out there, and, you know, they're really not running any storylines, you know, you just go out there and you wrestle, and, you know, and entertain the crowd, and it's a lot of fun, you know, so,
but. Well, I mean, in closing, anything you want to say to your to all your fans out there?
Yeah, you know what? It's, you know, so far I've had a fun career. You know, ups and downs, like anything in any career. Definitely keep watching TNA, and hopefully we'll be moving to a better time slot soon. So that way we don't have to stay up that late.
Nice, nice.
It's getting in. You know, I just turned 30 this in October, and find it hard to stay up past, you know, 10 o'clock.
Oh, man. I got 1 year left, man. I'm not really looking forward to that myself.
Oh, you're going to be 30 next year?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know what? Everybody made a big deal about, oh, 30, 30, 30. I was in Sydney, Australia, really early test.
So, oh, man.
Spending your 30th birthday with test. No, actually, there was like a, it was like a apartment hotel type deal where you had bedrooms.
Okay.
So they wanted to take me out, and actually the promoter over there, they bought me a cake and stuff, and it was a lot of fun. So I actually wrestled Jeff over there that loop, and it was a lot of fun. So.
Oh, nice. I wish you had fun getting older, like we all have to do.
Yeah, and the boys are like, oh, we're taking you out, because Joe's over there, and Christopher Daniels, and Gail Kim, and, you know, and they're all, you know, yeah, we'll take you out. She's like, no, because you're going to get me hammered. I feel like crap for like 4 days, so it's kind of like, you know, but everybody was so tired with the traveling and everything, and that was the second day. Everyone was just so beat, and they got back and went out to eat, and I think I grabbed something on the way back, and I crawled in bed and made a couple calls, and I fell asleep, and apparently, you know, the next day everybody said he did the same thing, so I escaped.
The older I get, I find it's more fun to talk about going out and having fun than actually going out.
Yeah, really.
Rather sleep.
So.
Rhino, man, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, bro.
Well, thank you. I wish I could have been more entertaining, but it's one of those days. I just got back today and just so drained physically, mentally, and everything. But thank you for having me, and, you know, thanks to all the fans out there.
The Man Beast Rhino taking time out to talk to us here on JG's Radio Free Insanity. As we've mentioned before, new guests every week. We've had some great guests on here. Samoa Joe, Rhino, Spike Dudley. I go down the list every week. It's going to continue from here, guys. Be sure to check back throughout the week, and we will have the announcement about next week's guests, too. So you don't want to miss that. Check out everything that's going on the site. If you get a chance, you can also drop a line to Dr. Tom Pritchard. Ask Tom at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. Ask him a question or two, and he'll take time out to answer you, hopefully. And yeah, guys, plenty going on. So be sure to check back, leave us feedback, check out the Insanity forums. Until we next meet, this is James Gutman saying, be well, and thank you for sharing our insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.